All right, folks, it's time for the Enneagram on the Drew Marshall Show. For thousands of years, spiritual teachers from many different traditions have reminded us of the richness of the human spirit and its potentials, except in Tim. But without real self-knowledge, it's not possible to awaken the deeper truths of the soul or to sustain whatever degree of realization we have attained. One of the most powerful tools for understanding ourselves and others is the Enneagram, an ancient symbol of unity and diversity, change and transformation. Last month, we discussed two personality types, the helper and the achiever. Let's see if this is you. The helper, the caring, interpersonal type, demonstrative, generous, people-pleasing, and possessive.
Yep.
That was you, wasn't it?
Yeah, one of mine, yes. I've got three that came close.
You have a personality disorder.
Yes.
Type 3, the achiever, the success-oriented, pragmatic type, adaptive, excelling, driven, and image-conscious.
So Megs and Tori.
Right. This month, the individualist, the sensitive, withdrawn type, expressive, dramatic, self-absorbed, and temperamental.
Hello.
What are you, is that a
Shakespearean pose? Dramatic, yes. Alas, poor York, I knew him well.
Lend me your rears. The investigator, the intense cerebral type, perceptive, innovative, secretive, and isolated.
Ooh.
Gail Scott has been teaching authorized Russo Hudson Enneagram workshops for 1,000 years, and she's on the phone. Hello, Gail.
Hi, Drew. Well, not quite 1,000 years.
Long time, though. You're the master. You're like like Daniel, you're like Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah.
Okay. Long time, yeah.
All right. Anyway, first of all, you had a big training week last week in Massachusetts. Where was it? In Mass? Was it?
It was in Connecticut.
That's what I meant. It was one of those hard to pronounce states with way too many letters in it. And how was the week?
Yes, it was. It was wonderful. It was our 6-day part one training, which is an immersive training in the Enneagram, and we spend about a half a day on each type, plus we give you the overview, the history, and it's a very, very thorough, grounding training for understanding the Enneagram for people who want to use it in their personal life or who want to use it in their vocation. A lot of coaches, a lot of spiritual advisors, a lot of therapists, psychiatrists. So we get a real mix of people. I think we had people from 5 different countries for this particular training.
Wow. Nice. Any Canadians?
Yeah. No, because you didn't show up.
Oh, but I'm bumps.
I know. I was supposed to go, and I didn't go, and I'm a jerk. So there you go. All right. Well, let's get stuck right into it. Type 4. Type 4 in the Enneagram. The label for type 4 is the individualist. And we're going to spend a little longer with you today, Gail, because I think I'm type 4, and this is the Drew Marshall Show, and so I would like to spend more time talking about me.
Makes perfect sense.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So let me just read something here from the Enneagram website, the Enneagram Institute website. Fours are self-aware, sensitive, and reserved. They are emotionally honest, creative, and personal, but can also be moody and self-conscious. Withholding themselves from others due to feeling vulnerable and defective, they can also feel disdainful and exempt from ordinary ways of living. They typically have problems with melancholy, self-indulgence, and self-pity. At their best, they are inspired and highly creative. They are able to renew themselves and transform their experiences. Their basic fear is that they have no identity or personal significance. Their basic desire to find themselves and their significance to create an identity. So that's the kind of the summary of a four. That's pretty spot on, right? I mean, I got it from the website. That's it.
Do you relate to that description?
I totally do, and I think that some people, you and I have talked about this, you're surprised, and other people are surprised, and Tim, you would be surprised with this as well, because the word reserved comes into this, and people don't see me as being reserved.
I totally see it.
Yes, okay.
But you see everything else in it?
Well, you know what? Because this, of the three that I, my highest scores, this was my highest, number 4. So I can.
But you said you were.
No, I have 9 and a 2, and they were like 23 and 22, but my 4 was a score of 26.
Okay.
So it was technically the highest one. Okay. But I can see that because you and I are very similar people.
Shut up.
And, okay. I'm sorry, I'm just trying to be reserved. And. I know that there are times...
We need to let Gail talk here.
There are times when you and I need to step back and just hide.
Yeah, that's true. Okay.
Kayla? So, yes, so type 4 is a withdrawn type, and which means under stress they usually withdraw, although they're a withdrawn type that likes to be followed. Like, if I withdraw from you, it means I want you to come after me and let me know that I'm...
Exactly.
That I'm bang.
But isn't that every guy, though? Isn't that a male thing? No.
It's a sensitive guy thing.
Not as a real template to behavior, but... We also call the four, well, we call the four the individualist, because they're basically the type four person is asking, who am I? What's meaningful and special about my existence? Am I just a generic person, or am I here for a special reason? What are my special qualities? And this comes from feelings of not being seen or mirrored for who they really are, especially in childhood. So fours form their identity around the idea that they're unique, they're different, especially from family of origin. It's interesting that a lot of fours typically will say that they didn't relate to their family, they didn't feel seen like by their family, they didn't feel like they came from the same. In fact, a lot of fours think that they were mixed up at birth, or that they were left on the doorstep of their family.
Or they were adopted.
And they might actually have been adopted.
That would just
compound the feeling that I'm different from my family of origin, that I came from somewhere else, and I'm not like other people. So there's a kind of pride as well as a shame around the idea that I'm not like other people. So on the one hand, fours pride themselves on their uniqueness, and they feel special and different and sort of, not like anyone else. But they also feel flawed. They feel like there's some inherent flaw in me. I didn't quite get the owner's manual. I don't know how to relate to people. It's not easy for me to be sociable. I just, everyone seems a little bit strange, and I seem strange to other people. So it's like the parents didn't feel attuned to me or understood. Now, that might not necessarily be literally true, but this is how the personality of the young child is able to plug into building an identity for him or herself. So I don't identify, I don't belong in the family, and can feel from very early childhood that perhaps the parents didn't adequately welcome them into the world and, see them for who they really are. Oh, they might have been treated as a generic child rather than having been seen and treated as the very special and unique person that they feel that they are. So it often develops into this profound sense of loneliness and being misunderstood, and they're always introspecting on that. Fours are the most introspective type. They fall back on their sense of their feeling states to try to know who they are.
Okay, so at this point, though, Gail, I cringe, even though it's ridiculously accurate. I read this out to my kids one day, and they went, "Holy cow, that's you!" So even though it's ridiculously accurate, It makes me sound like a sucky narcissist.
Bingo.
Well,
please tell me I'm not. Please tell me I'm not right away. Please.
The 2, 3, and 4, the heart types, the feeling types, are the most prone to narcissistic disorders.
I have a beautiful navel.
It's just because, they're the most introspective. They're always thinking about about their feelings. So because there's this tremendous quest for who I am, like what's unique about me, who am I really, they have very powerful emotional states. And so they believe that how I'm going to find out who I am is by paying attention to my emotional state. So they often average fours often become, very moody and temperamental, and they can be really carried away by feelings of melancholy and sadness and longing. There's a sense that somehow I missed out on life's goodies, But, I'm also trying to find a solid sense of myself. My emotional states are all over the place. So there's all these shifting emotions, shifting sands. I don't know from moment to moment how I'm going to feel. Huh. And so there's a lot of inner turmoil in the emotional lives of fours.
Tim?
Yeah, Gail. Tim here. I think I may have alluded to this the last time you were on, because it just seems
Don't you turn this into you. And this needs to stay about me.
That I know that myself personally, and although Drew won't admit it to it, I suffer from depression. And it seems like a lot of these things that are a number four are mm-hmm. in some ways informed by my depression or whatever.
Yes.
Are like you said, the 2, 3, 4 are the heart people thingies. Do these mm-hmm. do these Enneagram number people are they more susceptible to mental illness than others? Do you find, like, on an average, more people in that category mm-hmm. is
that would make sense that the heart categories would would be more vulnerable to mental health issues? No.
No, any type, all types are vulnerable to mental health issues. It depends on the level of development that you're at. So in our system, every type has, we've broken it down into, or Don Riso broke it down into, as part of his masterwork, broke it down into 9 levels of average, of healthy, average, and unhealthy, and neurotic and psychotic. So within your type, whatever your type is, you can be a realized being or a guru and operating at the very high level.
Thank you.
You can be an average, yes, you can be an average person like most of us. Or when
Thank
you fall down into what we call the lower levels of development, you're more prone to neurosis and psychosis, and each type is more vulnerable to particular kinds of mental disorders. So fours are not more likely to be to have mental problems. However, their mental problems tend to fall into specific kinds of areas, and chronic depression is one of them.
Okay. So I want to talk about those healthy levels. And by the way, we're on the phone with someone named Gail. Gail Scott, she's the senior faculty or a senior faculty member of the Enneagram Institute, and we've been featuring this, the Enneagram monthly, and we'll do so until the end of this season because it's fascinating, and we're finally at my type, and so we're going to spend a little longer. Type 4, the individualist. So the levels of health in this type, for mm-hmm. anybody that cares about me who's listening right now, please pay attention to this. At my healthiest, at my best,
yes.
profoundly creative, yes. expressing the personal and the universal, possibly in a work of art, inspired, self-renewing, and regenerating, able to transform all their experiences into something valuable, self-creative, self-aware, introspective, on the search for self, aware of feelings and inner impulses, sensitive and intuitive to both self and others, gentle, tactful, compassionate, and highly personal, individualistic, true to self, self-revealing, emotionally honest, humane, ironic view of self and life, can be serious and funny. You see what I said there? Can be serious and mm-hmm. funny, vulnerable and mm-hmm. emotionally strong.
So you're really identifying with this, it sounds like.
Well, when I'm in my high, but let me go to the low here. Forget the middle of the average section. That's just boring. When I sink, when I tank, yes.
Let's stay on the high for a minute because I think it's a lot for people to take in all at once. So, yes, in the healthy areas, so fours are sometimes called the artist or the tragic romantic, and it's not true that all fours are artists or all artists are fours, obviously. However, it is true that type four people have a poetic and artistic temperament. So they are sensitive to the environment, and they have a very strong aesthetic sense. They love and appreciate beauty. So you'll notice in the homes, even workspaces, of type four people, there'll be beautiful elements. They'll be very personal and beautiful. There'll be real flowers. There'll be gorgeous, you know, textures and whatever they're into, collections of seashells. But it's very important for four to be surrounded by beauty, to create beauty in their environment. And if they have artistic talent, they might create beautiful personal art. Could be music, poetry, literature, visual art. Many, a huge proportion of the great poets and singer-songwriters of our time have been fours. And why this is because the fours are really what we call the deep sea divers of the unconscious. They're not afraid to dive to the dark depths of their own life experience and bring up all the immense pain and suffering and longing that's there, the unrequited love, the missed opportunities, and write about it or sing about it in ways that other people can relate to. So their personal experience taps into the universal experience for all of us.
Right. So let me just throw out some famous examples of fours or individualists.
Well,
okay?
let me just tell you also too that we've just lost, this might not be on your list, but we have just in the last little while lost 3 very prominent type 4 artist, and that would be David Bowie, and before him, Amy Winehouse, and most recently, Prince. They're all type 4, artists, singers. And if you think about how their art, so for fours, it's really important that they express, you know, the very personal aspects and create who they are in the world and what's meaningful and unique about them. And all of those artists were, you know, you can't say they weren't unique, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, here are some others. Rumi,
the poet Rumi, yes.
Tim, you know that?
No, I don't.
Oh, dude, if anybody needs to get into Rumi, it's you. R-U-M-I.
I have a Roomba at home.
Oh, stop it. Chopin, Tchaikovsky, Jackie Kennedy, Onassis, Edgar Allan Poe.
Also a lot of Canadian singer-songwriters. As I said, most of the singer-songwriters that have lasting significance, many of them are four. So from Canada, Leonard Cohen, certainly, Joni Mitchell, Neil Young. They're all about, as I said, diving deep and bringing up very deep and personal and symbolic and universal truths for all of us.
Yeah, Bob Dylan, Paul Simon, Yusuf Islam, or Cat Stevens. Now, Cher, you see, there's someone that I think, you know, it's always weird when you read the list of famous people and you think about what we know about them and you think, like, for example, you put Donald Trump into a category that blew my brain. What category was that again?
We're not going to talk about Donald Trump today.
Oh, okay, sorry.
We're not going to let famous celebrities hijack this podcast.
No, we would never do such.
To get off track about celebrities, it's more important, I think, to understand what's going on inside the person. Right.
Okay. So, well, I want to get to the darkness, okay? The unhealthy level of me. This is what this segment of the Drew Marshall Show is called. The unhealthy level of Drew. Tim, can we have some sad, melancholy music, please?
Yeah, just give me a second.
Play in the background. When dreams fail, become self-inhibiting and angry at myself, depressed, alienated from self and others, blocked and emotionally paralyzed, ashamed of self, fatigued and unable to function, tormented by delusional self-contempt, self-reproaches, self-hatred, and morbid thoughts.
You're reading way down. Reading the descriptions that are way down at the bottom.
I know. That's where I want to go. I'm telling you, but I relate to this. I blame
when people have really bottomed out.
Yes, when fours tank, this is what it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
All right, everything is a source of torment. Blaming others, they drive away anyone who tries to help them. Despairing, feel hopeless, and become self-destructive, possibly abusing alcohol or drugs to escape. In the extreme, emotional breakdown or suicide is likely, as I did when I was 15. Generally corresponds to the avoidant, depressive, and narcissistic personality disorders. Ladies and gentlemen, The Drew Marshall Show. All right, that's enough.
Okay, so you've been there, done that, is what you're saying.
Yeah, man, I'm a dark dude.
Yeah, well, you know, under stress, we all fall sort of predictably down the levels and cope or act out in certain, you know, somewhat predictable ways. So if you are able to identify with and say, yeah, that's me, both the healthy and the unhealthy, then I would say that is a pretty good indicator that you are a type 4 individualist.
But why does that surprise you? Because I'm so chipper on the phone and I'm jokey and, you know, that's just a mask.
It's just a mask, apparently. It's just your persona, absolutely. Right.
Man. Do you have any advice for type 4s? Do you have any tips for type 4s? Any help? Can we get some free help, please?
Sure, absolutely. So one thing that is true about 4s is that they tend to look for their identity because they're trying to create, call them together, create this sense of identity, find out who I am. And the two places that they look, one is in their history. So they tend to interpret their history as having been not a romantic comedy, but a dark and suffering tragedy. And because that's really juicy and negative emotions are juicy, they connect to that part of their history, to their story. Hmm. So we notice that fours are usually carrying around this big bag of troubles, like how I was mistreated, how I wasn't seen, how I was, you know, ignored, how I, you know, the people that left me, the love I didn't get, the way that, you know, if only my parents had bought me that piano that I begged for. I'd be the concert pianist that I was meant to be, but they didn't see me. They didn't mirror me. I didn't get what I needed. So there's this stuckness that average fours tend to have around their sense of their tragic history. And they think that by investigating that and constantly thinking about that and feeling different things about that, they think that's where they're going to find themselves. But in fact, the transformation for the fours actually happens when they're able to start to let go of their story,
right?
Let go of the tragic history, and then find out who they actually are. But generally, they build their identity out of all the painful and negative emotions, the things that were done to me, the ways I've suffered, right? So it's very difficult to sort of move on. Fours can stay stuck for a long time, even for their entire life, in the tragedy of their life. They can become, suffering tragic divas because of that. So when they're able to... Did I just hit a nerve?
No!
No? Okay. So one thing is to, I encourage my clients, my fours, to see through that story and see that that's only one part of their history, but it's not necessarily who they actually are. And if they're trying to find out what is special and unique about me in the world, then I need to let go of my story, because that keeps me suffering as a victim, and it's difficult to go on from there. And the other thing is that fours are often... very captivated by negative feelings because they're more juicy. Having joy and lightness and smiley face can be very, fours can be very disdainful of that. But, anger, hatred, abuse, sadness, those things, I can really get my teeth into that. So fours often get hung up on the negative emotions, the negative memories, and just go over and over and over and over and over that, and until they have to almost filter their reality through something negative. They look at a sunset, and it becomes, oh yeah, it looks just like the sunset when Johnny left me and told me he was going off with someone else.
I hate Johnny.
So everything can become... What did you say?
I hate Johnny. Such a jerk. Okay, so I just want to, I'm looking at the time, even though I've said we've gone longer here, and I do like talking about myself as fours do. Let me just sort of succinctly wrap up a couple of things here. Some tips for type four. And again, this is all on the EnneagramInstitute.com website. So I would encourage everybody to, if you don't have the coin, if you don't have the $15 to take the real test, then take the free one. It's a sampler, and it's interesting. And you don't have to take any test, but it'd be interesting for you to take. I would say just go there, pay the $15, do the real test. They're not going to send you junk mail. And then the stuff they send you to help you figure out more about your personality type and how you interact with others is amazing. So let me just throw this out here for type fours, the individualist. Do not pay so much attention to your feelings. Avoid putting off things until you are in the right mood.
Right.
Self-esteem and self-confidence will develop only from having positive experiences, whether or not you believe that you are ready to have them. A wholesome self-discipline takes many forms, from sleeping regular hours to working regularly, exercise regularly. It has a strengthening effect. It's a big word. I want to read this. In the opposite way, sensuality, excessive sexual experiences, alcohol, drugs, sleep, or fantasizing have a debilitating effect on you, as you already know. Therefore, practice healthy self-discipline and stay with it. That's been a key thing for me. And finally...
Is that right?
Oh, yeah, huge thing. Avoid lengthy conversations in your imagination, particularly if they're negative, resentful, or even excessively romantic. These conversations are essentially unreal and, at best, only rehearsals for action. This is just ridiculously accurate. Okay. I'm sufficiently freaked out on air and a little too vulnerable right now, so.
Okay. So we'll take the heat off you and we'll talk about type five.
What is type five?
Type five we call the investigator, and this is the intense cerebral type who are extremely perceptive. Now, we've just moved, by the way, from the heart center to the head center. So now with type 5, we're talking about people who are more identified with their their brain, basically, with their thinking processes, with their cognitive abilities. So the intense cerebral type, they're very perceptive and innovative in the healthy levels. What's really the key characteristic is their intense mental focus. They might have a very narrow focus. They want to master one particular subject, some area of life that they're intensely focused on. And this usually happens early in childhood. The difference between the four who looks around the family and says, you know, I was left on the wrong doorstep here. I do not relate to these people. They don't get me. They don't understand me. The five looks around at the family who might be, you know, very kind and loving people, but, you know, they believe in this fat guy that comes down the chimney at Christmas time and leaves gifts, and they think that something called a tooth fairy comes into, and like, I'm in real trouble if these people are in charge of my life, because they have this sort of intent about the world. So mom and dad are trying to tell me that, you know, grandma's up in heaven, you know, singing with the angels, but hey, I saw her. She's in the ground. That's where grandma is.
Right.
So there's a kind of lack of sentimentality and an inability to believe story and what seems like stable. So fives become very sort of insecure about the holding environment, who's in charge of them. So what they want to do is learn about the world in ways that they can, so that they can master something and bring it back to the table, have something to share, have a place in the tribe, because they often feel insecure in terms of the social arts. They're not particularly comfortable around people making small talk, but what they love is to be able to just be, learn something about the world, push the envelope about the known world, and go into uncharted territory. So this starts early. They might be, you know, up in their bedroom, pouring through comic books or special books or taking an interest in bugs or falconry or bicycle repair, stamp collecting. And now, of course, in our time, it's the fives of the world who have really ushered in the computer age, because for fives, what's most important is having access to material, to knowledge, to wisdom, to understanding, and to have it at my fingertips, and not have to be involved with other people. So
right.
The computer age is really the brainchild.
Wait, so one, like an example, a television example of a five that I can think of,
mm-hmm.
would be Sheldon, right?
Yes.
From Big Bang Theory?
In Big Bang Theory, yes.
Yeah.
He is supposed to be the poster boy, type five, who is a bit awkward in social situations and romantic situations, but is very keyed into and mastering of a subject that has meaning for him. And so because they have this intense key mental focus, they often do become the scientists of the world. So I was saying about the computer world, Alan Turing, who is a five, Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg, a lot of people in that industry who are at the forefront of, well, science, medicine, a lot of the great scientific advancements have been through, you know, like Stephen Hawking is a five.
Sure.
Albert Einstein, people like that.
Gail, one thing that I ask you time and time again when you're on our show is, let me start with what I think, and then I know how you're going to correct me and then help me understand why what I think is wrong, okay? So it goes like this.
Okay.
I think a four and a five are a poor romantic match. And the reason being is that the four is extreme heart type and five is extreme head type. And I think that's just a bizarre match. But you usually push back with, no, any type can be romantically cool with another type as long as we're not flying around in the unhealthy side of their category. Is that right?
That's right. Yes, that's right. We see, successful couplings of every type combination. What we don't see as often are two people of the same type. However, for instance, in your example of the Big Bang Theory, Sheldon's girlfriend is also a five.
Right, but she has a heart.
She does have a heart, yeah. Well, it's not that fives, don't have heart,
well,
but they don't lead with their heart.
Yeah.
They don't lead with their heart. They lead with their mind. In fact, that becomes the only thing that they can trust, because emotional encounters and emotional demands made on me by other people is very unsettling. And I only have, the five has a sense that I only have so much in my gas tank. I only have so much in terms of personal resources, my time, my energy, my attention, my ability to engage in an interpersonal way. It's very draining for the five. Yeah. So they can only take so much of that, and then they have to get back to the drawing board or back to the lab and turn on my mental focus to what I care about the most.
Okay, but I still, when I think about me being, like, I'm ultra-relational. As an individualist category four, I'm right. Everything is relational. Everything, hyper-relational,
yes.
Right? And so when I when I read the description of category five, type five, sorry, I keep saying category, type five,
mm-hmm.
The investigator, well, while I admire some of their qualities, I would not want to be romantically involved with an investigator. I think that would just leave me dissatisfied in a huge way.
And you're probably right, because the fours demand the most emotional intimacy. Fours love emotional intimacy. They want to go deep with people. Yep. They want to have real conversations about emotional, how I feel about the world and how I'm taking it all in. But that's not five's main focus. They really don't want to hang out there. They want to talk about what they are learning about the world. They're great innovators. They like doing things in new and different ways. So you're right about that. There's not the same... it would be difficult for a five to, not that it doesn't happen, we do see four or five relationships, but it's difficult for a five to meet the emotional demands of a four.
Of a four, yeah.
Because fours want,
Okay.
So there are challenges and gifts with every potential pairing.
So can you give us some celebrity examples? Because we all know celebrities so, so well, inside and out, intimately. Some celebrity examples of we said a few, of the investigator of type 5. Just some more celebrity examples, please.
Oh, okay. Well, are you a fan of The Far Side by Gary Larson?
Wow. Yes, yes.
Okay. So he's a wonderful example, I think. A lot of animators, a lot of cartoonists are 5, and it's because they can create their own world and become a master of it. And Gary Larson talks about literally The Far Side, which is, sort of a metaphor for how fives perceive the world, as though they're seeing it from a sort of a distance, like just hanging on by their fingernails at the edge.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was going to say, if fours feel that they were left at the wrong doorstep, type five people feel like they were left in the wrong universe.
Yeah.
They often feel like somewhat alien to what's going on.
Would you say that fives would potentially look at those around them and their default position with others is, you're a moron?
Well, in the lower average unhealthy levels, that is, yes, that's true.
Okay. I know of somebody who's like this, happens to be my attorney, one of the sharpest guys in the world. He was on our show a couple of weeks ago, and his default with everybody to start off with a relationship is, you're an idiot. You don't know. You know, I'm just going to start with the fact that you're an idiot. Then I won't be disappointed because you're an idiot. And then once I figure out you're not an idiot, well, then we can be more human with each other. But I'm starting with, you're an idiot.
Okay, yes. Well, because fives do identify with their mental capacities, they do tend to think that they are, and sometimes they are, the smartest guy in the room, but in the sense of, it's more about being identified with their intellectual abilities. But yes, when they're under stress, in the same way that a four might say that other people are being superficial or not having depth, then fives would think that.
Yeah, that's
that
true.
Are not,
that and that's
not
that's my default. I think that most people don't look deep enough into themselves or others. I'm really sensitive to whether people actually are listening to me. So that's why I don't actually open up about myself to other people, because my default is, you don't care. You really don't care. I know you don't.
Mm-hmm. Right. And fives really don't want you to care about them. You to care about what they care about.
Yeah, that's right.
What they're involved in, what their specialty is, what they're doing. So their fives are always asking why. They're drawn to difficult questions. They love overturning conventional wisdom. They just have this piercing, profound curiosity. And what they're interested in is what's under the surface, like appearances, you know, common accepted wisdom. They don't care about that. They want to go under the surface, peel away the layers. And in doing that, my mind becomes the only thing that I feel that I can trust. And interestingly, they often have particular fives often have a particular sensory acuity that attunes them to the world around them. Like they have an extraordinary ability to see, to perceive the world around them. They just tend to be wired like Maseratis in their brain, so that there's often one extraordinary sense of perception, like a natural gift, some kind of physical wiring. Like they might have perfectly pitched ear, they might have photographic memory or really keen eyesight. They might have some form of synesthesia where they can see music or see numbers, such as we saw that if you saw the movie Beautiful Mind, the story about John Nash, you know how he could see numbers and see math. So they often have this just a particular sensory acuity that allows them to see, to penetrate reality more deeply than the rest of us. And that's what they live for, pushing back the boundaries of what we know.
I want to just bring in our intern here because I find it an interesting scenario that she has a family member who is one of these categories. Is that fair, do you think, Megs? So Meg's dad is maybe a five, right? Maybe an investigator. Okay. So as a 20-something-year-old young lady who has a father who's an investigator, what would be some advice you might have for Megs to, in dealing with her dad?
Well, to understand that even with loved ones, even with the people that I care the most about, love the most about as a five, ongoing need for being personal or intimate or telling you how I feel about things, you know, getting into emotions and feelings is very, very challenging for type fives. And they can take it in little doses, but then they need to be able to retreat back to the wherever they go.
Is that true, Megs?
Yeah.
They need to be able to retreat and recharge and fill their batteries. And then they can take it. They can take relationships, especially if there's emotional demands being made on them, even social demands, like hanging out at a cocktail party is just deathly for a five. But if I have a particular role to play, if I'm the DJ at the party, or if I'm, you know, holding forth on something, or if I can talk to people who care about the same things that I'm studying and interested in, then I'm okay. But just having to make small talk, or even worse, having to tell people, you know, being called upon to say how I feel about things, right, or to have some, you know, deep, intimate, emotional interaction with someone, it's very difficult and very draining.
Okay, so I want to let Megs in here just for a second. Megs, you've got the Enneagram guru on the phone. Mm-hmm. We're kind of putting your dad into a, you know, kind of a category.
He's not listening.
Well, he might be. but, you know, every father, daughter, and I put you on the spot. You didn't know I was going to do this, but I put you on the spot for this reason. Every father, daughter needs to, I think, figure out where they fit in these categories, because once you see your father acts in a certain way, and it's because he is a certain way, it helps you not take things as personally, I think. You know what I mean?
That's right.
Yeah, for sure.
That's right. That's one of the greatest gifts of understanding the Enneagram personality types, is that it increases your sense of understanding, your tolerance for the things, the behavioral parts of people that drive you crazy. It also helps you know, gives you more understanding about why you drive other people crazy. It increases our tolerance and our empathy. And as I like to say, we all think that we're in the center of the universe, and everyone else who doesn't think, feel, talk, and behave the way we do is just a little bit crazy or a little bit off.
I but thought that was just fours that thought like that.
Yeah. Oh.
So I have a question. I was just wondering, you know, when you're dealing with a relationship, you know, it could be between father and daughter, or really any kind of human interaction, do you think it's, you know, better to sort of try to adapt to them a little bit, or like have them adapt to you? Like, how do you handle that?
Good question.
Well, hopefully both would happen, but your chances of improving the relationship are always better if it starts with you. If you take it upon yourself to, first of all, learn about the type of the other person, find out what their basic fear is, their basic desire, what they're running from, what they're looking for. It's very informative. When you know a person's personality type, Enneagram type, you know almost more about them than they know about themselves.
And how do people take it? Like, if I were to say to my dad, like, oh, you're being such a type 5.
Well, no, it's not a good idea to throw their type at them, because then people withdraw and cringe and they don't want to get into it and they don't want to own it. But if we can show up in a way that, we always like to say, if you can show up as a more healthy example of the person's own type, if you can model healthy qualities of their type, that often puts people at ease, if you can do it sincerely. But really just understanding what the fears are and what the deficits are, what the challenges are for the other person's type, and honoring that. So it doesn't mean compromising yourself, but it means taking it into account and honoring these ways that people are actually hardwired, because this has to do with brain chemistry. It's not just some, this is not just a made-up system. It's a real thing. So people are wired differently. So type fives, for instance, are wired in a way that kind of, you know, emotional, cutesy, sentimental intimacy just drives them bonkers. So if you know that, then you can attune to them in a certain way that will make the relationship and the interaction and the communication, more possible, more healthy, more easeful.
Well, that has been a very informative segment about the Enneagram, brought to you by Gail Scott, a senior faculty member of the Enneagram Institute. We went a little longer today because, well, we needed to talk about me. EnneagramInstitute.com is the website you want to go to, EnneagramInstitute.com. I would encourage everyone to go there, check it out. If you can't afford the $15 to do the real test, then do the cheap one, do the free one. That'll tease you into the 15. Tim, you've done the big one, right?
I have, yes.
Yeah. It's just really interesting, and it helps you understand more about you and how you interact with others, and helps you understand more about those that are in your life and how you are reacting to them, yeah, and they're reacting to you. And it just takes the edge off of everything. It depersonalizes so much human interaction. Does that make that
nope,
sounds
that
cold
make
and
sense.
Callous?
Yep. No. Because you are. You're a number, whatever.
Yeah. Gail?
Yes.
I like you.
I like you too.
So good to have you back in the show. We'll talk to you again next month. Please, can we?
You bet.
All right.
You bet. I'll be here.
Excellent. Thank you, Gail.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.